Hello, friends, and welcome back to another episode of I'm Like Anime. I'm George, and with me is...
Tony.
Hello, Tony.
Hello.
We are the mighty co-hosts, ravaging the seas of current anime. Mm. 2021, the spring is upon us.
Are you trying to make a One Piece reference? Is that what you're doing?
No, I was just riffing to build excitement. But I, you know, there's a lot of One Piece in my brain. So
ravaging the seas thing, yeah.
Probably, yeah. I'm a pirate now.
Oh, okay.
In my mind.
Okay. Sounds good.
But we're not talking about pirates today.
No. What are we talking about? Cab drivers?
Yes.
Oh, well, then that must mean it's time to talk about Odd Taxi. Episode 4. So, yeah, this episode, I don't know how much story we can go into. This is sort of almost like a one-shot, separate story from everything that we've seen so far. It all focuses on a character, which I don't think we've seen this character before, right? He's completely new to us.
We saw him during last episode because... I don't know. Are we talking about stuff?
Sure.
I'll just... Okay, yeah.
Did we see him during the scene that eventually comes back in this episode?
Oh, okay. Because I remembered it so vividly, and I had to go back just to make sure.
Yeah, I didn't even remember that.
But yeah, it's basically Oda last episode had this character in his car who had a gun, and, you know, things were tense and then not so tense and then tense again, and the guy ended up getting out, and they came to an arrangement. But Oda was still scared. He threatened, you know, the people he loves, one of which being Shirakawa, who's his alpaca. And so, like, he gets this guy with a gun out of his car, and he, like, you know, he gets a text from her. She's like, I'm waiting on this bench or in this park or whatever. Right. And so he rushes to go to her, and he's, like, speeding down the street. And there's this guy with his phone just in the middle of the street that he, like, almost hits and, like, veers out of the way. But in the midst of that, this mysterious character, you know, drops his phone, goes flying into like a gutter, but it just has like flowing water. It had rained, I assume, and
yeah, something.
And his phone is ruined. But we learn way more about the importance of what was on that phone at that very moment.
Yeah, and we get a whole lot of backstory on this character as well, which raises some questions for me. For example, birds are birds, but everything else is people?
Yeah, I was wondering about that too, like, because these are anthropomorphic animals and they're each a different animal and they've, you know, it kind of represents a part of them in some way. But yeah, these animals, people, are now having pets.
Right.
Which, okay, they're people, so people have pets.
Right.
But they're birds. I don't know. It was very interesting.
Yeah. So I was trying to think, have we not seen any bird characters? I don't think we have, so I guess it makes sense. And then I was trying to think, have all of the characters that we've seen so far been mammals? And I think so.
I believe so. Maybe some rodents, but I don't know. Mm. A lot of mammals.
Yeah. I mean, rodents are mammals as well.
I guess that's true. Yeah.
Rodentia being sub. Mm.
Okay. Anyway. Fair enough.
But birds, not so much. Reptiles, not so much, but I don't think we've seen any reptiles yet either, have we?
Fish.
It's all been mammals.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess it fits within the world. It sort of
interesting choice.
It sort of tweaked my mind a little bit where I was like, wait, birds are still just birds? Okay, I guess. Anyway, I totally derailed the topic. But yeah, so this character, like I say, this is like sort of a one shot that follows him through essentially his entire life in a pretty condensed version of it, up to the moment where he almost gets hit by Odo's taxi, and then a little bit after that as well. And yeah, I mean, it's interesting enough. Like, as I was watching it, I was like, what is this? Like, am I watching the right show? Like, it looks like the right show.
Yeah. Well, it's like, it's an interesting...
Did something happen that I didn't know about? Like, what is this? Why am I seeing this guy?
It's an interesting deviation in how they've been introducing characters and telling the story so far, where, like, they're an entire episode is being devoted to explain why this character was so stressed, you know, why it's so huge that he dropped his phone right. that night, right?
Yeah.
Which initially to us was just like some crazy thing that happened. You know, it was just a throwaway, like, oh, yeah. wow, like you almost hit that guy, you crazy taxi cab driver.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I don't know if we're spoiling all of that, but I did write down, because I pretty much said the first part of what I wrote here, but then the second half of after him dropping his phone, which had like this super rare dodo on it from like a game that's kind of like Pokemon Go, but yeah. it's like zoo animals, and
it's a digital gacha game.
Yeah. 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 Essentially. Yeah. And so he wants this super rare dodo, and it's very important to him, and that's all explained to great detail throughout yeah, his younger
whole
life.
Yeah. Backstory explains why it's so important, and yeah.
and he finally gets it, then almost gets hit by a taxi, drops his phone, gets it restored, has actually lost it, mm-hmm. and is now, you know, vows to, is now, you know, pit, he knows who the taxi cab driver is, and so.
Yeah.
But also that night, I guess that's the other part, is like that same night, his cockatiel, like you were referring to, his bird yeah, dies. Yeah. And he said they lived for like 15 years or something. It's like yeah. he's had him since he was a young kid, which is crazy.
Right.
I've never had any birds or anything, though, as pets. So I assume that's true, but it seemed like a long time.
I don't know. Yeah, that seems like a long time for a cockatiel. Small yeah. birds don't tend to live quite as long as, like, larger birds live for, well, like human lifetimes even. Oh, wow. So 15 years for a cockatiel, I guess, isn't crazy, but...
Yeah. Well taken care of, I imagine.
Yeah, I guess. I've had friends that had birds and stuff when I was younger, and I don't remember any of them living quite that long, but
no.
I don't know.
Well, they point out that this very night that his phone... That's what it seemed to me anyway, but this very night that his phone was destroyed and he lost the super rare dodo that he had just caught.
Yeah.
He went home and his cockatiel had died.
Yeah.
And so he goes out to bury it, and lo and behold, finds a gun.
Yeah, he goes like just to like a local park and starts digging yeah. underneath a tree, and finds a box buried yeah. where he happens to be digging.
And we had seen the character who buried that gun in a previous episode.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting, like, is this character, this is my question, is this character just important to explain why that gun is missing and why someone's, you know, I mean, now he wants to kill our main character.
Yeah. I assume he's not going to kill the main character.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I just wonder how much his importance, extends beyond that, you know, like if he got an entire episode.
Yeah.
devoted.
I would
to
assume
that
at some point Odo has to become aware of this character trying to kill him. Right.
Yeah.
So he has to attempt to kill Odo, which is just going to add to the stress that is already sort of piling up on Odo. Like, he's got just bits and pieces every episode, little bits and pieces of stress piling up on him. So I think this is just another piece of that. But yeah, I mean, it was an interesting episode, other than I didn't really remember the scene before where he almost got hit by the cab and dropped his phone, or at least I didn't recognize him from that. So
okay.
when this started, I had no idea, like... I had no idea how this related to anything until I saw Odo almost hit him with the cab.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, okay. And I remembered that scene then.
Mm.
So yeah. So it all ties together yet again, but yeah. instead of a whole bunch of threads, like loose ends of threads that are slowly unraveling, this is just a single solitary lone thread that becomes raveled, I guess, into yeah. the rest of it. Right.
Which is a bold choice, and
it's a different, I mean, it's sort of the opposite. It's a different take on what we've seen so far.
Yeah.
You know, it was interesting. And I, like, being a slice of life fan, this sort of felt like a slice of life. This episode felt like a slice of life. It was so much just about this one character and his life without there really being any driving plot, I guess, just sort of explaining his nature. And
they're really good at, I think, the way in which they're telling like these stories in these episodes. Cause like in this one in particular, like I thought it was very skillfully done. Cause like to what you're saying, like felt more slice of life, you know, but essentially what they were, you know, intending, you know, what they accomplished doing was like setting up his entire backstory of why that Dodo was so important to him, right?
Right.
And they do it in such a clever way where, you know, like, he has so many false starts in the beginning when he's like telling the story, where he says he says some like emphatic statement, and then he goes, "Well, not, you know, that's not really true."
And he goes off
and
on
he explains
tangent.
What he means, like, to a very, you know, to the nth degree. But then he'll be like, "And that's not actually right," and keeps doing that. So we learn so much about him, but yet it feels like such like part of his mundane life. Like, it was well done. Like. It was jarring to be like, okay, this is interrupting the entire flow of like what they've established.
Right.
But I'm already kind of interested in what's going on with this kid.
Yeah. Like they had pretty well established like what the story was going to be, where the story's going to go. And like, it seemed like the next episode was going to be where we really got to the meat of it, where the story began and we started going down the path of the story. And instead they just severed it and injected this, this boy's story. Which I think is brilliant, really. Like it's they set you up and then they, you know, subvert your expectations, and you know, we'll get back into the story next time, but you know, there's this other thing you need to know about first.
Yes, you know? Yeah. Which I like. I like that a lot. That's something One Piece, that's on my brain. Does pretty well, like several times. But yeah, I like that. So great show. Still loving it.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. It's still quite good. I didn't put a number score. I didn't do numbers for anything this week, but,
I didn't either, but I think I'm back up to an 8 because I was initially an 8, then 2 7s, and, I'm just liking it. I wanted to see a little more before I'm like, all right, I just feel comfortable and like seeing where this goes and not, you know,
I liked this episode quite a lot. So it's definitely pushing me higher. I don't know if I'm quite to an 8, but it's a very, very high 7.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. So next we have a show that I'm watching titled Megalobox 2 Nomad.
Nomad.
Or just Nomad.
Yeah.
But it's the continuation of Megalobox, about a boxer and in this season, his internal struggles of I don't know, why he's alive and what he's fighting for and what's important. And I have now found my notes.
Good. I mean, that was a good fill, buddy. I gotta tell you, I didn't even realize.
I'll take it. I talked a little bit about this last week of what was going on in the story. So I suppose I can kind of pick that back up. But Joe, our protagonist, was coaching this guy Chief, who was kind of the leader of sorts of this community of Hispanic people who live in Japan.
Oh yeah.
Who had kind of escaped their, you know, their life of where they lived, you know, to hopefully find a better place, and they're there. But their land's being threatened, and there's a lot of persecution just for even being there. And this episode finally reached the pinnacle of the tournament. So if Chief could win the tournament, Joe is now coaching him to do this. But if Chief can win, then like he'll have enough money to buy the land they're already living on and have been living on.
Right.
And so, you know, reclaiming, you know, their part of this country that's not their homeland.
Right.
So I don't know. It's kind of a fun, interesting dynamic there. And what you might imagine is they're successful in doing that.
Oh, good.
And it's very emotional. But then the episode ends on a very sad, forlorn scene, which I don't know if I want to spoil, but it's immediately undercut, and it's bittersweet. I suppose I was kind of I don't know, like I kind of expected this to go on for a few more episodes of like Joe coaching and like him being like wrapped up in this community and stuff. So now, but at the end of this episode, Joe now has he has the kind of closure he needs on the denial he's been feeling about his own past. And so now, things have kind of, have ended sadly where he's at, but have kind of mended. And so now at the end of this episode, he's leaving to go, presumably find Sachio from the first season, who was the younger homeless kid that he had kind of formed a bond with and was right with him, you know, through everything, you know, and him winning the tournament back then. But, yeah, so I don't know. It's, that kind of catches us up without spoiling. everything in that episode. But it's really good. I don't know. It's when I explain it, like story wise, it sounds like, oh yeah, of course they won. And then, you know, and then some things happened and we're moving on. But it's just, I don't know. It's a really well done show. And it's among Odd Taxi is my favorite.
Yeah. It's difficult to sort of explain the intricacies of how the story is told while just sort of trying to summarize the story. Right.
Yeah. Story beats, it's like, okay.
So yeah, like there's this big championship and if they win, blah, blah, blah. And of course they win, right?
I mean, yeah,
that sounds,
and I didn't think they were going to win this soon, but
that sounds like
it.
Terrible story writing, but the story itself, I'm sure, is much more eloquent in the way that it presents it. So
yeah, it's paced well. And I just kind of get lost in it. It's one of those, I mean, we're watching all these shows every week and we have a deadline when we record. Yeah. But this one's always a breeze, and that's kind of what I gauge my favorite shows as. Like, what do I put on? And it's just like, I wish there was more, and I can't wait, and that was easy.
Yeah, for me, it would have to be Super Cub. Like, that's the one that, like, I wake up Wednesday morning, and I'm like, Super Cub.
Nice. That's up there for me, for sure. But yeah, we have slightly different tastes, so I'm not surprised that that's your number one. I respect it.
Anyway, I think that sounds like that does it for Megalobox, so I guess we can move on to Higahiro. After being rejected, I shaved and took in a high school runaway. Episode 4.
You haven't shaved.
No, but after I do, I'm going to... well, wait, I have to be rejected first, I think.
Okay. Yeah. You're waiting for the rejection. You've just
yeah,
been
and then I'll shave. Yeah, and then I'll take in a high school runaway.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, every episode I say this, I feel less like I'm going to be Usagi dropped. And again, it's true with this episode, so I can probably stop saying that now, but, I don't think it's going that way. They could still do it, but I'm going to assume
they can always
it's not
it.
Going that way.
If history has taught us anything, it's always, yeah. They may not always end up doing it, but the potential is always,
I mean, in Usagi drop, it was so unexpected. Did not see that coming.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So they could be, you know, leading me down the primrose path and they're going to Usagi drop me. But yeah, I don't need to talk anymore about that aspect of the show because I think we're in safe territory and I'll let you know when it does happen, if it does happen. Anyway, so in this episode, Sayu, our high school runaway girl, wants to get a part-time job, and Yoshida, the man who got rejected and shaved and took her in, says, yeah, I think that's a good idea. You know, something to get you out of the house. You're always stuck in here and stuff. So of course she does, she goes and gets a job. And during her first day at the local konbini where she gets the job, Sayu sort of accidentally lets slip that she lives with, a man who is not a relative of hers. And then of course her coworker sort of becomes curious about this situation and sort of invites herself over and says, you know, I need to check this guy out and make sure, you know, he's on the up and up and everything.
Seems so, very unprofessional.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just a coworker, not her boss or anything. So,
yeah.
Anyway,
just rude then.
So yeah. So she comes over and they have dinner. And of course this coworker thinks that he's a great guy because he's a great guy, you know? And that's pretty much that part of the story. And then we go to Yoshida at work. And he is texting Sayu while at work. And Mishima, the kohai who has a crush on him, sort of, asks, oh, are you texting Sayu or something like that? And then his friend Hashimoto overhears. And Hashimoto's like, oh, you told her about that? And he's like, well, it just kind of slipped out because the events of last episode that I covered during our last episode on this show, she sort of, yeah, discovered the situation and was like, you got some explaining to do, but none of that explaining happens in this episode. So anyway, and of course, Goto-san, his boss, who he confessed to and got rejected by, sort of overhears all of this, although not all of it, so she doesn't know the complete story of everything. But she overhears it and, of course, starts becoming jealous again and then invites Yoshida out to dinner again to discuss things where she, you know, again, asks like who he's dating and why he's hiding it and all that stuff. And he's like,
this is a coworker.
This is his boss.
Oh, the boss. Oh, yeah, okay.
The boss that he had the crush on, that he confessed to that she rejected him. And she still, you know, is keeping tabs on him for some reason. Anyway, and
is she drunk in this episode or this scene or drinking?
I mean, I think, yeah, they are drinking. Her beer is pretty full though. So, unless she's already drank a full one, I don't know.
She came drunk.
Maybe. No, they're coming from work. So,
oh, okay.
Anyway, Goto and Yoshida are at dinner and she's asking him the same questions again. Like, you know, it seems like you got a girlfriend, all that stuff. And he says, you know what? I'm not answering any of your questions until you answer my question from last time, which is, why do you care what I do? You rejected me, remember?
This is the titular rejection that he's referring to.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And then she sort of is taken aback for a second and then says, well, I care because I like you. And he's like, wait a second. You told me, like, you rejected me. You told me you had a boyfriend. You had had a boyfriend for years, and that's why you were rejecting me. And now you're saying that you like me. She's like, well, yeah, no, I don't have a boyfriend. I just made that up. That was a lie because, anyway. There's a whole conversation between them, like, hashing things out.
Like, we don't even have a show without a rejection.
Yeah.
He's self-aware of the show that he's starring in. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that that's true, but
Yeah, it's just a joke.
Anyway, so yeah, so she apparently likes him, but rejected him because she felt it wasn't the right time to get into a relationship with him for some reason, is essentially what she says. There's a whole lot more conversation going on between them. But then after they talk and stuff, we have like an after credit scene where Yoshida texts Sayu, the high school girl, and says, hey, I'm bringing Goto-san home. And she replies, okay, well, I'll get out so that you can have the place to yourself. And he texts back, no, she's coming over to meet you. So he's apparently now told Goto about Sayu. So I guess we're going to see that, how that develops. So yeah, before I was expecting the happy family unit that is inevitably forming here to be Yoshida and Mishima, the kohai from work, you know, becoming boyfriend, girlfriend, and then sort of, you know, keeping Sayu around as a adopted daughter sort of thing. But now it seems like maybe Goto is going to be filling that that motherly role. Mm. And since she's a little older, I guess it makes more sense to go that way because I can't really see Mishima being motherly, but you know, anyway, and that's where we're at with that show. It's, yeah, I think it's still really pretty solid. I'm still enjoying it. The HE is all gone. So, you know, if you wanted to watch it, but you were worried about the HE vibes that it seemed to be casting off by its title and its first episode, it's all gone at this point. So get in while the getting's good.
Wait. Sounded like kind of sexual, like get in while the getting's good.
Get into this show while
the show is getting while you
don't
good.
Have while you don't have much to catch up on.
Are you telling me?
Yeah, I'm telling you.
No, I don't have time for that.
Yeah, you do.
I gotta finish this anime so I can watch other anime.
Eventually, all of our shows are going to like coalesce to the point where we're both watching all the same shows.
Mm-hmm.
Uh huh. Like I already picked up those Snow White notes. Now it's your turn.
This is not agreed to.
I'm just telling you, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, you haven't started watching Megalobox, so.
Oh, that's next on my list.
Nice. Well, you're crazy. Anyway, next on the, in a good way, in a very productive way when it comes to watching things. Consuming media.
I'm very overproductive at watching TV.
Yeah. And consuming media just in general. I'll tell you about an album sometimes and, you know, if it's something you get into, the next time I see you, you're like, oh yeah, I've heard it about like 50 times.
Yeah.
I'm exaggerating, but maybe not by that much.
Not by much, I don't think.
All right. Next up, we have Yakumo.
Yakubo!
Let's make a mug too. Two as an also. We're all making mugs. Would you like to join?
Let us all make mugs, please.
We shall make the mugs, and then we shall drink from said mugs.
Shall we make some mugs?
And toast to the mugs we have made.
Mmm, that sounds great. Let's do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I wrote for this episode, emotional bowl.
Ah, yes. Bowl, B-O-W-L.
Bowl.
It almost sounded like you said bull.
Bull.
As in...
Bowl, sorry. Yeah. Bowl.
Bowl.
Our main character's father breaks his favorite bowl. Mm. Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm almost self-conscious about it.
Yeah, it's all right. Now that we've clarified what word you're saying, I think we're good. It's just the first time I didn't want it to be misunderstood that you were saying it was emotional bull, you know?
Bowl.
So this episode is just a bunch of emotional bull. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
That way I should have opened with that. But no, the main character's dad breaks his favorite bowl.
She breaks his favorite bowl.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
It becomes broken.
Yes.
He's had it for so long. Anyway, we find that out later.
True.
But I wrote down Chazuke or Ochazuke is what he likes to use that bowl for.
Ochazuke.
Ochazuke.
Yeah. Wait, I have it written down so I can pronounce it right. Ochazuke. Yeah.
Ochazuke.
Yeah. Ocha being tea.
Yes.
Zuke being...
So it's like green tea over rice. Like,
yeah.
Easy. I'm in. I mean, we got to do that.
Oh, it's been on my list for a long time. Yeah. It's more of a snack thing, I think, though.
Mm.
But, yeah.
We can make it work.
We can make some ochazuke sometime.
Ochazuke.
Yeah.
But anyway, that sounded good. And so I just... So basically, I mean, that sets up, you know, what happens in this episode. And it's unfortunate... because the episodes are so short that our main character, she, you know, naturally wants to make a bowl to replace her dad's.
The one that she broke.
Yeah. And so she's, they do take us through a lot of like, what should it look like? And, you know, what should it feel like? And how big should it be? And blah, 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 all these things. I was hoping that they would show more of like the actual like frustration of pottery and like, you know, the trial and error and messing up. And it was just kind of like by the, once she figured out what she wanted to do, she did it. And it didn't turn out being like great, of course, because she just started.
And she did like 12 times or something, right? Because they showed her like sort of forming the clay and then starting to make it. And the next scene is right before they're putting it in the kiln. And there's like 12 bowls there.
Yeah.
Not that she necessarily made all of those.
That's true. Yeah. So that could have been shorthand. But yeah, I think, I don't know, the episodes are so short that like they kind of gloss over like a lot of that. Now, I was just hoping there'd be more of that because the end of this episode, it becomes very emotional with the bowl because she can tell, you know, I don't know. He was happy that she made it for him, but he didn't like it as much as the replacement bowl he got.
Right, that one of her before. Classmates had made that was a sort of loner bowl until she made the bowl that she was making. I said bowl that time. I don't know why.
I know, man. It's it's a wonderless bowl. It's like we just learned this word.
Like a bowl in a china shop.
or a bowl in a...
Well, a bowl in the china shop would be pretty normal.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But either or, I mean...
Yeah. So for me, this was just sort of an indication that they're settling into their routine of what this show's going to be, which is event happens, which necessitates creating pottery. Pottery is created. End episode.
That's fine. I just want more of the ins and outs of pottery, like more pottery, specific pottery, you know, isms.
You might have
nerdy pottery stuff.
You might have to go to the live action segment for that.
I guess, which, yeah, I did watch. They're still wearing the same clothes.
Yeah, it was all shot in a day, I'm sure.
You think so?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. They've gone to a lot of places.
Maybe 2 days.
Or 1 day. Anyway, yeah, I watched it, and there's not much to say. That's all I wrote about it.
Okay. I didn't write anything about the live-action thing. I just had some more notes on the anime portion, which is... You know, character development was pretty limited. I don't think we learned anything about any of them, except maybe that the main character's father likes Ochazuke. I think that's it. That's the only new information we got about any of the characters.
I I'm with you on that. I just, to wrap up what I was saying, in addition to that, I would have enjoyed showing more of the frustration of her making the bowl she did make, because at the end of this episode, she is saddened that her bowl, you know, that her dad didn't love it as much as she had hoped. But it motivated her to get better at doing it.
So that's how she felt.
But yes.
I think her dad probably actually liked it more because it was from her.
Yes.
But as far as from
her perspective,
from usefulness, he didn't enjoy using the bowl as much as he enjoyed the other one, the form factor of the bowl or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think that was probably the same case as the original bowl that he loved so much. And it was more that he loved that bowl because of where it had come from.
Yes.
Not because it was the perfect bowl for, you know, eating ochazuke.
Yeah. I'm not disputing any of that. I just think that if it would have showed more of how hard it was for her to make that bowl, it would have made it, the fact that she made it for him at all, would had more weight to it.
That's true. Yeah.
It just would have elevated that, but then also would have elevated her wanting to get better, even though she had worked so hard.
Right.
And that, you know, her, you know, because I feel like the more point of it is she's new to all this. Her mom is like a master at it. And like, she knows nothing, essentially.
Although when the original bowl that he loved was made, her mother was a first year in high school as well.
So it's a sentimental thing.
Maybe not any better at it, honestly.
Yeah. So. Well, that goes to your point. Which I agree with is that, you know, from his perspective, it was a sentimental attachment to the bowl. And so he, you know, hit the fact that his daughter has now made him one is, you know, probably just as powerful, if not more. But
Anyway, I agree with you though that if they had shown her the hard work that she put into it a little bit more, like they showed some of it, like in the design aspect of it, not actually the throwing of the clay or anything, but the designing, like her figuring out the optimal shape for the bowl and like trying to figure out exactly how to make it. Like she spent some time on that. So there is effort in there. So we have that effort invested, which then sort of justifies her feelings at the end where she's disappointed.
I just think she's picked up pottery very easily.
I mean, they do sort of gloss over that, but
I don't know. And that's what I'm talking about. Like, just like having a bowl, like cause in this episode, we don't have to spend too much more time on this, but she was thinking about what shape a bowl to do based on like what the previous bowl he had was and what might be best for him. And so she was doing all this thinking about like what it would look like. And so to me, it's like a good opportunity when she's actually trying to make it to show that she's having a really hard time making, you know, creating that shape in her mind, you know, but like she was just able to, you know, I don't know.
Just I mean, presumably she was just able to just do it like that.
Yeah.
Although we don't see that.
It's just glossed over.
So,
It just, would have been a nice.
The effort they decided to focus on was more the designing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, like she even takes a day and like goes to the park and is like watching ducks in a pond while she's drawing pictures of bowls and stuff like
yeah.
that. Like, she's, you know, she's putting in
effort. Oh, for sure. So. For sure. That's true.
But I know that you're in this a little bit more for the clay than the drawings.
Well, I mean, not necessarily. I like it all, but I just think it if it's going to try to be this hobby, you know, centric, I don't think it should be like, you know, super dramatic or anything. But like, I think it should be able to show them struggling a little bit to figure out, you know. It's just like, oh, this is how you make a bowl. And they're like, oh my God, I'm doing it.
I mean.
Which I guess.
But struggle's not part of the slice of life genre very much, really. It's more about just, you know, things happening.
It doesn't even have to be a cliffhanger, though. It could be a very, you know.
Yeah, I know. But like,
struggle,
conflict, stress. Like, I suppose conflict does exist. In this show, it certainly has anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're no strangers to having some conflict, but it's pretty light, I think.
Yeah. They immediately resolve it, and that's all I'm asking for with this. But they're short on time too. They're only making 14-minute episodes, seemingly to have this 10-minute live action, you know, voice actor
advertisement for Aomori Prefecture. I forget the name of the town, but whatever.
Yeah.
They're paying their advertising dollars to get this show made, so they're going to get their live action portion.
So what do we got next, Tony?
Anyway, next up we got The Saint's Magic Power is Omnipotent, episode 4. So it feels like we're starting to get more towards the central drama, the point of this show, which makes sense because we're in episode 4. This is where you kind of start really getting into that. Before it was mostly character building, world building kind of stuff. The central drama seems to be focused around, is Say the saint? Is Say the saint? So it's not, is she a saint? Which I had been saying, you know, since the first episode that there were these two girls that were both brought into this world and that they were both saints was sort of my assumption. But it sounds like only one of them is actually a saint. When they were first summoned, the prince sort of, you know, picked the other girl and said, oh, she must be the saint for whatever reason, which hasn't been explained. But, and then Say was just sort of cast aside to do whatever she wanted. And she pretty much just wanted to try and live a normal life in the world. Mm. But now it's becoming more and more apparent to us. I mean, it's been apparent to us for quite a while. It's becoming more and more apparent to the people around her. And even in this episode, the king sort of takes note of this power that she seems to have. And they sort of introduce this concept of like, well, we can't know if she's actually the saint until, you know, the supreme high mage or whatever wakes up from his nap, which I don't know how many years this has lasted or how long it's going to last. But anyway, he's the only one that can appraise, whose ability to appraise is high enough to be able to appraise a saint, I guess. So anyway, I guess we're waiting on that guy to find that out. But yeah, I mean, despite getting a little more plot heavy, it's well paced. Again, sort of relaxed and stuff. Like the plot's not really pushing really hard.
Correct me if I'm wrong, I thought last time she had like this one guy was like interested in her.
Yeah,
but like,
the Ice Knight.
Yeah, the Ice Knight. So how are they doing?
We didn't see him at all this episode. Oh, okay. So not sure if I assume that's going to come back in some way. Hmm. Maybe not the romantic relationship that I was sort of expecting that to follow that path. It seems like maybe more that he's going to come to her defense when she maybe gets in over her head with her saintly powers or something. Yeah, not sure exactly how that's going to come back in, but I'm sure it will. They spent too much time setting that up for it to just go away, I think.
Yeah, moving on to other things for the moment.
Yeah, and so she's, you know, going to the library, you know, she has a day off, so she goes to the library to, you know, learn more about magic and stuff, because that's sort of what she does on her days off, and she starts reading this volume that's sort of way over her head as far as magical ability goes. And that's where she meets the king, who says, oh, well, here, try this book, which has a bunch of healing magic and stuff in it. And so she is playing around with, you know, using healing magic. And then some friends of hers that are also knights, not like the really high knight, like the guy who's interested in her, but like, you know, other knights, they've just gotten back from some training exercise or something, and a bunch of them are injured. And she basically just goes and like heals all of them. And so this really sort of lets the cat out of the bag that like she has this mass of power, I guess. Like she has a massive amount of power. One might say the saint's magic power is omnipotent even.
You don't say.
So yeah, it becomes more apparent to more people. And yeah, so this is where it's going, is like, it's becoming more and more obvious that she is probably the saint.
Mm.
And that the other girl isn't.
Not? I mean, the king has to be, right?
Yeah. The king seems to recognize that she is probably the saint, but wants confirmation from the Grand Archmage or whatever his name is. The prince, I don't know, the prince is always off doing something else, and he's always hanging out with the fake saint, as I will now call her, the other girl. So, yeah, we don't really know what that dynamic
fake
is.
Fake snakes?
Fake snakes?
Fake saint.
Fake saints? Anyway, so the prince has been, you know, busy hanging out with the fake saint, I guess, wherever they are doing whatever they're doing. It hasn't been really revealed to us at this point. I assume that at some point we'll get a little bit more information on that. But yeah, at this point, it's still pretty chill and relaxing, and getting a little bit more story. So then, you know, maybe that relaxing is going to go away. But I don't hate where the story's going. So yeah, I'm still into this one.
Okay.
And is that the end? Oh, no. I moved things around.
Oh, no.
That's normally the one that we end on, but I moved things around. And so now...
I like to mix it up. Now we shall talk about the last show of this episode, To Your Eternity.
Mm.
A show we're both watching.
Yes. Fumetsu no Anatae. And yeah, that's why I ended up moving this to the end, was because rather than just having me talk at the end, we could have both of us talk at the end.
Nice.
I think smart. It's better that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thinking on your feet.
You want me to stand up? What?
So I'm going to make a comparison here, which I don't know. We'll see what you think, you know.
Okay.
I recently, in theaters, this past weekend, I'd never seen 2001, A Space Odyssey. So I recently saw that.
Uh-huh.
And it's a very classic film, very iconic. So many scenes in it, very iconic. And yeah. I'm about to spoil those scenes to draw a comparison.
I told you before, there's no spoilers from 1968.
I like to just give people a heads up. But no, this 2001 is a sci-fi movie by Stanley Kubrick. But it had a much darker tone than I was expecting. Like, I like movies, I like classic films, and I'm curious about them, and I like Stanley Kubrick, and I just had never seen this one. And so it was really cool to see, but I wasn't really expecting, and what I'm referring to essentially is the monolith, which there's this just haunting and gorgeous, but very haunting musical cue that plays every time the monolith is on screen.
Uh-huh.
But essentially the monolith visits apes and implies that... it's implied therein that evolution takes place, or at least, you know, an advancement.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you agree with that?
Yes.
I
haven't seen it in a long time. So like my memory is not as fresh as yours, but yes, it definitely, like, the apes sort of evolve into using tools is sort
yes.
of,
yeah. yeah. Seemingly because,
yes.
And so then the movie skips forward many years. 2001 seemed like a far off time in the '60s, I suppose.
So far into the future.
But there's, it's much more advanced than we have now with, as far as space travel and space colonization. But this monolith is discovered again, far in the future by, you know, civilized humans in space. And the movie ends, I'll just, you know, spoil everything, with the famous space baby.
Yeah. Again, there are no spoilers from 1968.
You keep reminding me. Anyway. So yeah, there's a space baby, which this is what I'm going off of, is my interpretation of this movie, that the monolith, somehow, created, you know, had a symbiosis or reproduced with humanity.
I see how you are relating it to this current thing now. Like, I was like, why are we talking about 2001 A Space Odyssey so much? Like, we're essentially going, not the whole story, but I mean, yeah, enough of it, right?
The broad strokes. I mean, it's a long movie. That's pretty much the gist of it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We have this in To Your Eternity, we have this orb. Mm-hmm. That becomes a rock, becomes a wolf, becomes a human, and is kind of, you know, learning about humans as whatever you want to call it, goes along, and it's learning things, and it's kind of, I don't know, it was created by a god. They talk about in 2001 where the monolith, they believe it to be previously buried, like intentionally buried. That's a line in the movie. So it kind of, to me, it reminded me of this as well, of like, it was this was intentionally done to send this orb, you know, to Earth, or presumably, what is Earth? I don't know.
Intentionally, I suppose, but fairly nonchalantly. He's like, the opening scene of this whole show is like, there's this orb, I tossed it to the Earth.
Which is kind of like a stone. Storybook or a fairy tale where it's like, so we don't know a lot about the creator and why, and maybe it's not important.
You say that it was created by a god. I don't know that that's said explicitly.
Okay. A god had it.
I don't know if they say that he created it.
Hmm.
Not that it probably matters, but
yeah. So interesting distinction. But similarly, in 2001, you're left to not know where the monolith comes from, or you know,
I guess we'll have to watch 2010. Just kidding. Don't watch that movie.
I know of its existence. But anyway, that it was very fresh in my mind, that movie. But I was thinking of it like just this show being like a different perspective of that. Like the monolith being something that can inhabit any, you know, thing on Earth, right? Like,
I was thinking more from the perspective of what you were saying about how the monolith shows up and sort of forces evolution or creates a sort of evolution of some sort just by its presence. And it is sort of the stimulus of that evolution, right? Like it stimulates the evolution just by its presence. And in this, it's, I mean, I guess in the beginning, just the Earth itself, but then later humanity, which stimulates the orb to evolve through the stages, right? Like that's one of the things that they say in the beginning is like they're like two rules, like it will live forever and it evolves, but it requires stimulus to evolve or something like that. I don't know. I remember they're talking a lot about it being stimulated to evolve. So
yeah.
So yeah, that's where I thought you were going with it, but
which is, I mean, definitely encompasses that. But I don't know. We don't know entirely where this is going yet, but I don't know. Something to,
well, should we talk about what actually happens in this episode?
I suppose so. I don't know. Is it?
All right. So, when we last left off, March had escaped from being, you know, dragged to the sacrificial altar, which she was required to do because she was chosen, to be sacrificed to, what's his name? Oniguma.
It's a tribal thing.
Yeah, it's just a tribal thing. It's what they do. Yeah. Anyway, so she now has decided to go and turn herself over to the baddies so that they can sacrifice her to try and save her friends back in the village one sibling, I believe, back in the village that she believes will be sacrificed in her stead if she doesn't return. And she, at that point, sort of leaves Fuchan, which is, the name March has, given the orb being thing.
Mm-hmm.
So she kind of leaves him behind. Is it her older sister? She calls her Nason, whatever Nason. Anyway, she managed to escape from the baddies and happens across Fuchan in the woods. While she's trying to find March.
Well, she kind of like badass, like she was tied up to a tree and she had a, like hidden in her boot. She had like a little like makeshift dagger.
Yeah. Like a bone dagger of some sort.
Yeah. So she's able to like there's like a little handle on it, knock that out of her boot, take that out with her teeth and then like, you know, grab it and, you know, throw it behind her somehow. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting. But I was, that scene kind of bothered me because I know it was like, it was all in service of her falling down this cliff and then finding Fuchan, as you call them, the orb.
Right.
The orb guy.
That's what March calls him.
Yes, yeah. But like you pointed out. It bothered me because she starts cutting the rope and you can tell she's almost through.
Yeah.
And then she starts hearing the stomping, which of some creature, you know, it's like, it's not a good stomping. It's coming closer and closer. That's why I wrote here, like, I guess she was frozen by fear. It's the only explanation, but if she had just started cutting her ropes, I would understand. She'd be like, oh shit. Maybe just be like, oh, what's happening? But she was so close. Like if she just cut a little more, she could have easily got away without any, you know, hassle. Cause I don't know. It seemed like perfect timing for me. Like this, we keep hearing the stomping. She's cutting the rope. She's almost there. And then this crazy bear shows up and, huge, like spike sticking out of him. I don't know what's going on there, but.
So I don't know. I don't remember if this was in the manga as well, but in the animation, she was almost through one rope, which it looked like there were like two sort of thick ropes tying her wrists together. Yeah. And she was almost through one of them. And usually if you get through one of them, then it all comes apart, right?
Yes, yes.
But then in the next shot where she's still sawing away at the ropes after the bear shows up, there's like three ropes and she's sawing through them sideways. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if they just needed to extend the scene or what. I can say that I told you last week that last week's episode was 1¾ chapters of the manga.
Mm.
So her escaping is the last quarter of a chapter.
Oh, okay.
So then when we pick up in the fourth chapter of the manga, it starts with March sort of getting caught and everything, you know, leaving Fuchan and getting caught and all that stuff. So it's not interspliced the way it is in this. So I'm not sure why they chose to do it that way. But so this episode encompasses the entire fourth chapter plus just the last little part of the third chapter.
Okay.
Anyway.
But yeah, then she comes across Fuchan, and then it all escalates to March being on the altar to be sacrificed.
Strapped into the altar.
Yep. Yeah. And the older sister, in quotes, running up to her and like trying to save her, and they're like, "Oh, we should stop her," but then
just as Oniguma is showing up too.
Yes,
right?
Yeah. Yes. Oniguma, that's right.
Yeah.
The bear god or something.
Oni is like a
devil.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
That works. Devil bear.
Yeah, devil Guma. Bear yeah. of legend in their world, it seems.
Yes.
So Oniguma shows up, so they're like, the main lady in charge is just like, yeah, like whatever, just they get two people to eat.
Whatever, he gets two snacks today.
Yeah. and as they're walking out the gates to close them, which is a very kind of odd / humorous scene. Fuchan, our orb guy, just kind of saunters through right past them, and she doesn't notice until like as the gates are closing, like who did I see in there? But we see him clear as day,
right?
But yeah, he goes in there and I don't know. I don't want to spoil all of that, but like he essentially like,
I mean, I'll spoil all of it. So yeah, then Nason and Fuchan show up as George said, after Oniguma shows up to devour his sacrifice that's been offered to him. And Fuchan turns back into a wolf and kills Oniguma. So
Well, he essentially just is immortal. So it keeps, you know, Oniguma would have killed him normally, but he just keeps like healing himself.
Yeah.
So that he like slowly takes him down.
Right, right.
And it's seen as like an act of God to the, you know, our would-be villains.
Hayase is the leader of those villains.
Hayase,
that name written down.
Yeah.
So after that, Hayase says, you know, we're going to have to report back to the village that, you know, you were killed. So you can't go back there. So I guess you should come with us to, you know, the big city where we're going.
Or we'll kill you.
Your choice.
Yeah.
You know, whichever you prefer. And they're like, I think we should go with you then. Anyway, that's pretty much the end. Really the interesting bit was that Fuchan turned back into a wolf, I think. I didn't know that he could turn back. And it seemed like he did it sort of at will, you know?
Yeah, like, I need to do this now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. It was surprising and hadn't been established, but it didn't bother me too much. I don't know. I was just like,
It didn't bother me, but I found it interesting because
what got me thinking,
I wouldn't have expected it, because thus far we've seen him turn from one thing into another, never regressing.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
What got me thinking, will there ever be a predicament in which he needs to turn into a rock to to be safe?
I mean, yeah, he probably could have done that 100 times when he was walking through the barren wastelands.
Right,
rather than just dying, be a rock. Just turn into a rock for a while.
I'll just be a rock. I'm good.
Yeah. I mean, you just sit there for a while and then be like, oh, I'll be human again now and whatever.
I definitely am still curious, though, as like how long we're going to be with these characters and like ultimately what the story is. Like, I'm enjoying it, but I feel like we haven't found like quite where we're headed
yet. Yeah. Yeah, and I sort of wanted the same thing. I feel like March is in this for the long haul, probably.
Yeah, that could be.
Like, she feels kind of main character, and the big sister, you know, supporting, but fairly main. Hayase, I'm not sure if she's going to be sticking around or not.
I do like the dynamic of March, like, because she's so young, but she like wants to be an adult, and you know, she likes playing with her dolls and stuff, and you know, mommy, and so they set that all up very well, and so now she feels like she is Fu-chan's mommy,
right?
So I don't know, it's kind of cool like what they're doing with that, but yeah, I'm just curious like where we go from here.
Well, I'll tell you where we go from here, because I watched the teaser at the end of the episode. What? Next episode, Immortal Orb Wolf meets Big City Life.
Cities. Okay. Here we come.
City. I mean, not like Tokyo, big city or anything, not like New York, big city, but like the biggest city in these parts anyhow. So yeah, that's, we're going to the city. We're going to do some city stuff. It looks like
Orb Man takes Manhattan.
Orb Wolf. He's a wolf now.
Well, yeah. But don't you think he can still turn into a man? You think he can go forward now that he...
I don't know. I mean, so it's... They sort of harp on it that, you know, to change requires stimulation of some sort.
So yeah, so you're arguing
something
that
has to stimulate him to re-evolve into that human, yeah. I suppose. Because, like, the stimulation for him to turn into a wolf was Oniguma showing up, I suppose.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. Like, there's some logic there that makes sense, so... I feel like something has to happen for him to turn into a human again. But maybe not. Maybe they'll just have him turn into a human for no reason. It's possible.
I don't know. Not that it'll be bad, but I just don't want it to turn into like sitcom-y, like, or just, you know, like this is our makeshift and family. And
by sitcom-y, you mean episodic, or you mean...
I guess so. Or just like, you know, played for laughs instead of... Because it really, from the first episode of the show, it felt like it really had something to say.
Yeah.
And so I still have expectations of that, and
yeah, I'd be very surprised if it goes all sitcom-y.
Okay. I would too, but I just had that thought of like, I could kind of see it like,
but because it is a Japanese anime, I will not be surprised when they have a beach swimsuit episode.
Yeah. And they gotta,
cause there's always one of those.
I gotta crack open a watermelon. No, you're probably right though, because I mean the whole dynamic is like, yeah, the three of them are together now, but they're technically captured by, you know, Hanase, this lady.
Hayase. They're not really captured.
Not traditionally, but like they're not, you know, it was either go with or die, right? So it's like,
right, you
it's
can't
not
go
the
back.
Friendliest of you know, road companions. I don't, you know.
I guess, but now that they've decided to go with her, and now that they're in the big city, I think she sort of fades away. Like, I don't see her being a big part.
I mean, I took it as like she wants to like do experiments on, you know, Fu-chan, and wants to figure
maybe.
Out, you know,
I mean,
the immortality of I don't know. I took it a more twisted way. Not that it was explicitly hinted at, but from what I remember from the ending and the preview.
Yeah, I mean, they're taking the bear carcass with them too.
Yes,
and it definitely
that as
seemed
well.
Like she wanted to, you know.
Yeah.
Investigate that or whatever, but
yeah, I mean, I doubt it would get that twisted, but
yeah, I don't.
That'd be cool.
I don't know. I mean, they've definitely set a fairly serious tone thus far. I very much doubt they're going to regress to being a sitcom.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I thought that girl was going to get sacrificed, and now she's not. And I like how they did that, but now I'm like, okay, this still isn't like a safe world that like this girl's away from her home and her parents. That like. Yeah. I mean, I guess he can protect her. I don't know. I don't know. I want to see more. I'm still liking it. I'm left hanging, I think.
Yeah, yeah. No idea where it's going from here other than to the city. And and then we'll see where the story goes from that, I suppose. But
so tune in. Tune into that.
Yeah, that is the last thing we have to talk about tonight. So that means I get to talk about social media. You've already heard it. You've heard it how many times before? Just go to the social media things, type Umlike Anime, UMLIKEANIME. You will find us. And then you can type messages to us. And we will be very appreciative of those messages. Let us know what we got right, what we got wrong, what you love, what you hate, what we're missing, something that we're not covering. We'd like to hear about it. We're always open to possibly adding new things. Although the later it gets in the season, the harder it gets to catch up. So I caught up on Mashiro no Oto this last week and added it to... I mean, George was already watching it, but I decided to add it. And at some point, I'm probably going to catch up on Megalobox, which means actually going back and watching the rest of the first season as well. So, you know, I'm not I'm not that opposed. George has less free time than I do, so it might be difficult to get him on board, but you can convince him.
I'll try.
Use your words.
Yeah, I mean, I could use some encouragement. I mean, there's so many shows that you're watching I'm not, so people weigh in. What should I really devote myself, my time to? My precious, precious time.
Yeah, I mean, you late added Mashiro no Oto.
That's true.
Yeah, it wasn't on your original list. It was on neither of our lists, and then you decided to add it, and now I've added it too. Yeah. So
that's
strange how that goes.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
But yeah, please, we would like to hear from you. We just want to know you're listening. Just say, yeah, I'm listening. I like it. Or I'm listening. I hate it. Or I'm never listening again. I hate you. Please die. Whatever you want to say. You know where to find us. I am Tony, and this is George.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.